Okay, so good morning, everybody. This is about 2:31 and it's February 9th. We're going to start integumentary system after we practice some stuff on tissues before we get to the integumentary system. And what do I know? Let's see, all the lectures are online. You should be making your way through the weekly assignments. Hopefully you found some drag and drop exercises, other kind of interactive exercises to help you learn the everything that we're learning in class, especially I think for the skull, because you're going to be doing skull this week in lab. But notice, skull is not on the first lecture exam, but it is on the first practical exam. So lab and lecture match up pretty well, but not exactly. All right, today's night, integument, then on Wednesday, bones, and then after bones and skeletal tissue is your first test. Right, but again, not on Monday, it's on a Wednesday. That's why I have it colored yellow. You can see the Monday labs have blue and the Wednesday labs have yellow for lecture exams. And it's 1 through 6, except chapter 3, not chapter 3. So 1, 2, 4, 5, 6. That's on the exam. And then the Monday after that exam is the practicum for the Monday group, and then a week after the exam will be the practicum for the Wednesday group. So the Monday group on this holiday, please don't come to school, but that means for the Wednesday lab, they have an extra lab period as a review to study all that stuff. So I think that's actually pretty handy. Anybody have any questions? Any questions? Okay, I got a quick quiz. What do you need for a test? What do you need for a test? Scantron, 882E, 882ES, that's one thing. Pencil, that's another. Eraser, but just any kind of eraser? Only one that you've checked out and you know for sure works. It doesn't smudge. You don't want to bring your smudger in because then you'll get docked points. Okay, so that's three things. What else? One last thing. Picture ID, student picture ID. Okay? Okay, please bring all of that stuff. So, any questions on the schedule, what you need for the test? Probably not. We've covered that pretty well. All right. So let's practice some tissues just a little bit. All right, I'm going to turn some of these lights down like so. Nice. Oh, plus the side lights I'm going to get rid of. There. All right, so what you see on the screen is nothing. It's just a rest station, so you don't have to say anything. But the next picture has something that you have to be able to identify. So what is happening here? Remember seeing this slide before? Yeah, it's mitosis. Mitosis is going on this special kind of fluorescent microscopy. And so you could say mitosis, but probably the question is going to be, name the phase of mitosis. And you would say metaphase, because all of these chromosomes line up right on the equator of the cell. What do you call this thing that has a point over here, expands a little bit, then has a little point over here? Okay. Yellow. I'll call it yellow. Does it look yellow to you?
Green.
Okay. Yellow-green. Probably not. But anyway, this green thing, this whole green thing, what do we call this whole green thing right here? That's called, and it's made with microtubules and centrosomes. So I see a centrosome here and a centrosome here. Building block of a centrosome are two centrioles. But what is this whole structure here called? Okay, and that is called the spindle apparatus. Spindle apparatus, made of these two centrosomes and microtubules. And remember, that's a monorail system that can push and pull these chromosomes to different locations inside the cell. Spindle apparatus. When does the spindle apparatus form? That's kind of a landmark of prophase, kind of a landmark of prophase. All right. So that was a lot of work. So we get a rest station so you can rest. But now, let's take a look at this. What kind of tissue is this? Okay, cartilage. I like that. And cartilage is what? A connective, epithelium, muscle, nerve, or what? It's a connective tissue, so it's cartilage connective tissue. But you remember, there's three kinds of cartilage. Do you see any fibers? No fibers. Hyaline cartilage, you could say articular cartilage. Hyaline is in your book, no fibers. All right, and then I see this little bubble. What's this bubble in the matrix? That's a lacuna, and look what's inside the lacuna. This is a, it's a cell, and in particular, a chondrocyte. Cyte means cell, chondro means cartilage. So there's a cartilage cell. So that's nice for that slide, pretty much everything, but that was a lot of hard work. So we get to take a deep breath and then move on to the next one. What is happening here? I see a bunch of nuclei, especially this one here. Do you see any structures inside the nucleus? No structure, so it's not undergoing mitosis. All right, what's that part of the life cycle where the cell is just in its normal living, living part? Yeah, that's called interphase, right? So all of the chromatin is extended, so you don't see it. All the little filaments have been pulled off of those histone molecules, and the chromatin is spread out all over the place. So cell cycle, I would say interphase. Oh, what's this? I see a nice spindle apparatus. Do you see chromosomes? Yeah, so mitosis is taking place. What phase? Yeah, I see a dropout in signal right here. That means the daughter chromosomes are being pulled apart from each other. All right, and indeed, that is anaphase. What's this? Okay, bone what? Bone CT. Yeah, you could just say CT. I know what you mean. Bone CT. All right, and then what kind of cell is this right here? That is an osteocyte, jot that down. I don't think it's labeled in your book, but it is labeled in the lab manual. Okay, so remember the lab manual is the answer key. I could ask you this, even though for some reason it's not on the slide. All right, and that osteocyte lives in a little bubble called a lacuna, just like the chondrocytes do. Right? Easy to tell, that's bone CT. What do we got here? Nice basement membrane. Okay, and I see a tube, nice cross-section of a tube. What's the lining of this tube? Okay, basement membrane, right? So basal surface, apical surface, it's a tube. Here's the center of a tube that we call the lumen of a tube. And is this simple or stratified? Stratified. Okay, you can't combine terms like I just did in my mind and write it down, right? So it's a simple epithelium, and it's cuboidal, right? It's not a symboid or whatever I was going to say. I'm not sure. All right, so simple cuboidal epithelium. Does your eye catch that pretty easy? I hope so. Should be pretty easy. I had a hard time with that one, so I need a rest station. Okay, next one. Yeah, blood CT. What's the special name for this matrix right here? Plasma. And then here are some formed elements, like what kind of cell is this? Lymphocyte, here is a neutrophil, and here is a red blood cell, or you could call it an erythrocyte if you want, erythrocyte, leukocyte, and this right here is a little platelet. Okay, those are the formed elements. What is happening here? Look at this. Here's that line. Here is the basement membrane. How many cells as you go from the basement membrane to the apical surface? I see kind of many. Okay, in this particular, so I have a sense that this is stratified, but if I look over here, maybe I just see one. All right, so I can't tell if it's really stratified or simple, so this is what we call pseudostratified. One good clue that it's pseudostratified, because pseudostratified always have these little jobbers on them. What are these things? Yeah, cilia. And their function is, in one word, motility. Right, they sweep mucus. Where does mucus come from? You see it on this slide. Goblet cell. Here is a goblet cell. And that mucus, or mucin, has been stained a really nice color for you to see. Right. So pseudostratified ciliated columnar, right? Because the apical surface has columnar-type cells. Okay, a lot of work. What do we have here? We're sort of going to look at this right today. But here is the basement membrane. Some people got this far in lab. And then I see a bunch of layers. So is this simple or stratified? Stratified. Can you tell the shape of these cells here in the apical surface? So it's a stratified squamous epithelium, like what we have on our skin or in our oral cavity. All right, so I would say what? Stratified squamous epithelium. I said that right. Here I see another tube. Basement membrane is right through here. Apical surface, which is right up against. What part of the tube is this? That's the lumen. How many cells do you see? Simple or stratified? 1, 2, stratified with the shape of these cells and that apical surface. They're not exactly perfect, but they're perfect enough to know they're cuboidal. So it's a stratified cuboidal. And is that a connective tissue? No. How do you know it's not a connective tissue? Because the cells are packed close together. That would be one good way that you could tell. Another rest station. All right. What do we got here? Ah. Okay. Nice basement membrane. And look at these pillows up here in the apical surface. They're not stratified. They're not columnar. They're not cuboidal. This is what we call transitional. Yeah, this is the shapeshifter kind of epithelium, right? So transitional epithelium. Please don't say transitional muscle or something like that. Okay. And on the practicum, you could abbreviate that EPI. EPI is fine. And what would you abbreviate connective tissue? You can abbreviate connective tissue, that's fine. CT. Yeah, just do CT. Oh, talking about CT, what do we got here? Areolar connective tissue. Make sure you know these fibers, like collagen, elastic. I don't see reticular. So, and this, what kind of cell is this right here?
Fibroblast.
It is the nucleus, right? But remember, nucleus is an organelle. If I want to know the name of the cell, you got to tell me what cell holds on to that nucleus right there. And that is a fibroblast, secretes these fibers. Right? What part of the matrix am I circling right now? Okay. Remember, the matrix has fibers, and it has this stuff right here. What do we call all this stuff without fibers? That is called the ground substance. Ground substance. I'm not sure I see a lead line pointing to it, but anyway, that's probably something that you should know. Holds a lot of water in our body. What is this? Funny kind of connective tissue, because the cells are close together. This is adipose connective tissue, right? And what's the name of this cell right here? Okay, here's the nucleus of it. I see a little cytoplasm, but mostly it's a big vacuole filled with oil or lipid. So the name of this cell, you could say fat cell, but that's great for like grade school, high school. We want to say adipocyte. Adipose is a kind of connective tissue, right? So this is an adipocyte. Your book uses fat cell, but don't use that. All right, restation. What do we got here? I see two centrosomes kind of forming, kind of pulling apart. What do you see inside the nucleus? You see any kind of pattern? See any kind of pattern? I see a light area and I see a dark area. I see a light area, kind of looks like a little bit of a worm right here. Right? Okay. So I do see a pattern inside the nucleus. And so this is prophase. But it's a very early stage of prophase because the nuclear envelope hasn't disappeared yet like it would at the end of prophase. All right. What is this? Yeah, it's a connective tissue. Here's a cell. Here's a cell. Yeah, it's dense irregular. I think my microphone, oh no, it's still there. Dense irregular connective tissue. Yeah, so it's collagen, right? So it's a really strong connective tissue, but collagen here is going left to right, in and out of the plane, right? There's probably even some going up and down. Oh, here, up and down. So collagen goes in all different orientations. Let's go back. Okay, here's collagen. Who can tell me what color that is? This is a dark color, as opposed to here. That's just ground substance. This white is ground substance, ground substance, ground substance. In dense regular connective tissue, we don't see any of this white substance, right, any ground substance at all. If you did, that would signify a tear in the ligament, tear in a tendon, for instance. Not a good thing. What is this? Yeah, reticular, very darkly stained fibers, highly branched, twisted, curled around each other, reticular fibers. Here is a basement membrane. What is the shape of the cell right here?
Columnar.
Oh, I'm glad you told me. I was going to say cuboidal, but it's not. For sure it is columnar. And is it simple or stratified? Yeah. Is that easy to see? Absolutely. All right. So let's look at this one more time. What is that? Stratified columnar epithelium. Okay. So I showed it to you for less than a second. and you saw it. And so on the practicum, you have over a minute, maybe a minute and a half. So you'll probably be really bored out of your mind on the practicum. So we're just going to keep practicing these things. What is this? It is muscle. And this is smooth muscle. You know, I almost see a little pattern in there. And that's just because of the printing process in your textbook. All right, so that's an artifact. But that is smooth muscle. Here is basement membrane, lumen, simple columnar. Thank you, simple columnar. And what is this? Yeah, dense, regular muscle, connective tissue. I guess what, I see some white areas right in here. But most of it is a purple? Yeah? Okay, nice. That's pretty then. All right, what do we have here? We're going to talk about this today. Nice basement membrane. See a lot of layers. So it's stratified. These cells here have what kind of shape? They're flat, so it's a stratified squamous epithelium. Here is a picture of skin in particular, and here's some dermis, and up over here is the epidermis. We're going to have some time to look at that today, I hope. What is this? I see striations because of the internal machinery inside these cells. Line up one after the other. So it is muscle specialized for contraction. Muscle is specialized for contraction. Now, where does this muscle come from? Can't be smooth because we looked at smooth already. How many other choices you have? It could be either cardiac or skeletal muscle. And it is cardiac because you see these branches. Intercalated discs mean these cells are really short compared to skeletal muscle. All right, so cardiac muscle, one nucleus per cell. Ooh, what phase of mitosis is this? Yeah, the last one. And what else is happening here? Yeah, cytokinesis, right? Separation of cytoplasm. What do we got on this slide? We got connective tissue. I see cells far apart, right? Okay. Now, what kind of connective tissue? I see like these little bubbles all over the place. All right. We have those little bubbles in bone, but does it look like bone? Doesn't look like bone. So that means it is cartilage. And you see fibers in the matrix. You see fibers in the matrix right here? Yeah, look at all these things. All right, and they all kind of line up together. They're pretty linear. That's how I recognize this as collagen. As collagen. So here is what? A fibrocartilage CT. Fibrocartilage CT. What's the other kind of cartilage that we're going to look at? Elastic. And we're going to see a lot of branches, a lot of branching patterns in those elastic fibers. What do we got here? Skeletal muscle, striations, many nuclei per cell. These cells do not branch. That's how we'd look at that. We're going to look at this in particular again today. So here is the basement membrane. All right, I see some cells here, cells here, cells here. So is this simple or stratified? Stratified, can hardly see these cells here, but they're flaking off. These are flat, so it's a stratified squamous epithelium. This is skin, so here's epidermis, down here is the dermis. Oh, I said, just for today, give you a little heads up, this is the epidermis, and here is the dermis. What does epi mean? Above or on top of, superficial to, right? Epidermis, on top of the dermis. We'll look at that today. Okay, what do we call these little bubbles? Lacunae, yeah, and what do we see in the matrix here? Do you see fibers? Yeah, do you see a lot of branches, a lot of branching patterns in these fibers? Yes, so this is elastic cartilage, CT, connective tissue. Right? And what kind of cells are these? These are chondrocytes, because chondro means cartilage. Nice. What's happening here? I see chromosomes, so that means mitosis. I see chromosomes all over the place, not any particular kind of pattern. They're just kind of wherever the nucleus was at one point in time. So if I don't see any pattern, this has got to be prophase. Got to be prophase. And then metaphase, that's easy to see. Hyaline cartilage, what kind of tissue is hyaline cartilage? Yeah, CT. All right, so you want to go through these slides one more time. Anybody else? Are you getting dizzy? Hopefully not nauseated because I'm going through them pretty fast. All right, so hyaline cartilage, CT, got chondrocytes there. All right, so I'm going to go through the next slide pretty fast, and I want you to tell me what you see. Okay, I saw interphase, right? I didn't see any chromosomes in these nuclei, so that's interphase. Next slide. What was that? Anaphase, yeah. The chromosomes were separating from each other. What do we got here? Bone CT, if you want to call it osseous connective tissue, that's fine. Osseous means bone, right? Like osteocyte. I showed that to you for way too long a time. It should have been like that. You still would recognize it, right? All right, next one. Simple cuboidal epithelium. Oh, I showed it way too long. Blood CT, pretty easy to tell. I saw cilia, so it's pseudostratified ciliated, and those cells were columnar in that apical surface, and that is an epithelium. Stratified squamous epithelium. I saw a tube. Stratified cuboidal epi. Transitional epithelium. Areolar connective tissue. Adipose connective tissue. I saw beginnings of chromosomes, so that is prophase. You don't have to tell me early or late or middle prophase, just say prophase. Dense irregular CT. Reticular CT. Stratified columnar epi. One more word, yeah, epi. Smooth muscle. That's a bad slide. That's just the way it goes. I've never seen a good slide of smooth muscle. Okay, next slide. Simple columnar. Dense regular CT. Okay, basement membrane, flat cells, many stratified squamous epithelium. We're going to look at that slide in particular. Cardiac muscle. Telophase and with cytokinesis, right? Okay, what do we got here? Let's go back. It's cartilage, right on. Cartilage, what kind of cartilage? A lot of thick fibers. Fibrocartilage, toughest kind of cartilage. Makes intervertebral discs, for instance. Knee menisci. Right, and what do we got here? Skeletal muscle, showed it to you for way too long a time. And again, that was skin. Basement membrane, many cell layers up over here. These are squamous, so that is a stratified squamous epithelium, and that's the epidermis of skin. Okay, the epidermis of skin is an epithelium, right? Epithelium because it covers a surface or lines a cavity. That's what epithelium does, or makes glands. It could be any of those. All right, next slide. Ah, what happened there? Oh, I got two. I didn't give you a rest station. Ah, okay, tell me those two in a row. Ah, now you really need a rest station. Elastic cartilage, CT, and then the other slide was, I forgot already. I think it was prophase. Let's go back. Prophase? Yeah, prophase. Because I don't see any pattern. If it was prophase, there would be a dropout of signal right smack in the middle. Right? So, and you know it's not metaphase. You know it's not interphase. Can't be telophase. So, prophase. All right, that is metaphase. All right, and that's where we started from. All right, I got a video on my website, and it goes through it slow the first time. The second time through is a little bit faster, and that will just show you that you can actually look at all of those tissues probably in just, maybe a minute, maybe 2 minutes. You can review everything with that flash quiz. That's pretty amazing. The other thing that you'll realize is that you can identify these things in less than a second. So when you have a minute and a half during the practicum, you might fall asleep. But don't fall asleep, please. Okay? Because you'll have more than enough time to look at everything. Okay, any questions? Anybody know where my website is? What's the URL for my website? It is dr-j-gober.com. So that minus is really what, just a dash. All right, so we are ready to move on to the next topic, and that is the integumentary system. That's the largest organ system in your body. And here are some pictures that I'm going to put over here. So a little bit of an introduction. I think we're going to talk physiology a little. Well, I'll give you a little bit of the composition of skin, which I see over here. So the integumentary system is made up of skin. Skin is just a bunch of layers. Here is the epidermis. It's a stratified squamous epithelium. And down over here, we got a couple different kinds of connective tissue. This is the dermis. That's what makes skin up. But skin also has some other structures. I see a little tiny muscle right here. This muscle gives you goosebumps when you're cold or some emotional stimulus. All right. You also have hair. And you have nerve fibers. So those are what we call accessory structures. Right, so accessory structures, hair, nail, glands, muscle. Oh, I see a gland here. That's a sweat gland. Here's another kind of gland. These are always associated with a hair follicle. That's a sebaceous gland. So sebaceous gland versus eccrine. In lab, you're going to learn of another one called an apocrine gland. It's really big compared to this one, so it kind of stands out very nicely. All right, so what's the function of skin? Man, you got to have skin because it has some really important functions. Right, it protects internal structures. Right, so everything inside your body is underneath the skin. It's protected by the skin from what? From infection, right? And also from dehydration. Protects your body from dehydration. So when, for whatever reason, you lose your integument, what are the two main things that somebody's got to think about right away? Infection and dehydration. Yeah, you can dehydrate probably in just a couple minutes without skin. And what would be one way that you would lose your integument? Hopefully this never happens. Like a burn, right? Like a burning victim. Exactly right. All right, the skin also regulates body temperature. So if we all put our pens right now and ran up the stairs in a circle, ran down, ran back up the stairs again, our body temperature would increase. And what would happen pretty soon? They start sweating, right? And so here is eccrine sweat glands. And that brings a little water and salty solution to the surface of your skin. And it takes energy to evaporate that water. And that energy comes from your body. That decreases your body temperature when that happens. Okay, so sweating. Also, if you are cold, these blood vessels close down. So blood doesn't go to your skin. It stays more in the center of your body. That helps you retain heat. So skin can work in those two different ways to help regulate body temperature, when you're hot or when you're cold. Produces vitamin D. All right, so there are cells that can take a precursor of vitamin D and turn it into another form. And probably somebody knows what else is required in order for that to happen. Okay, calcium is involved with vitamin D for sure. All right, but in order for your skin to make vitamin D, we're going to get to calcium in just a second. In order for your skin to make vitamin D, it has to have sunlight. It's got to have sunlight. All right, so too much sunlight, that's bad. Burns your skin just the right amount, produces vitamin D. And the good question that follows then is, what good is vitamin D? Who cares if our skin makes vitamin D or not? Because vitamin D is necessary for us to absorb calcium from our diet. And you probably know that we need calcium to make strong bones and a bunch of other things that I hope we look at in this class. For sure in a physiology class we do, right? So strong bones are important. What do you call that disease process when you don't have strong bones? Yeah, there's probably a couple, but the more prominent one is osteoporosis, right? And so how can you help protect yourself from osteoporosis? Making sure calcium gets into your body, so diet. And make sure you have vitamin D, and also exercise will help preserve your bones. Uh-oh, diet and exercise. That's why people just hate this class. Okay, diet and exercise is so important. Okay, and sensation. What kind of sensations have you felt today on your skin? Felt anything? Cold. You felt cold. Maybe hot. Maybe feel your clothes on you, your shoes on your feet, right? So pressure sensations. And maybe the wind was blowing outside this morning, probably not so much, but when the wind blows this hair follicle, there are nerve endings on the hair follicle, and you can feel the motion of these hair follicles. Right? There are free nerve endings that I see right here. These are pain nerve endings. right? They send signals to the brain that tell you that there is tissue being damaged, for instance. The free nerve endings are also important for cold sensation and hot sensation. So thermoreceptors, right, are free nerve endings. So I can think of three functions of these nerve fibers right here: pain, hot, and cold. All of them. Here is a funny structure, kind of looks like an onion. This is a Pacinian corpuscle. This can measure pressure or vibration that is superficial on the skin or deep. Where is this located? Is it deep or superficial? It's underneath this layer right here. All right, so it is deep. So deep pressure you can feel with this thing. Not very light touch, right, but deep pressure with a Pacinian corpuscle. All right, so all of those things we can the skin does for us. Probably the two most important that should just immediately come to mind would be fight infection and dehydration. Those are the important things. All right, so this slide looks kind of complicated. On my website, I also have a video that describes these structures that you can look at. And we're going to look at layers first. And we really want to understand layers and everything that we look at, blood vessels, digestive tract, even the skin, because when we find a disease process, we want to know exactly what layer that process originated from, what other layers are involved, and then, for instance, if it's cancer, then that cancer can be diagnosed. We can tell what kind of cancer it is. We can stage it. Cancer has different stages, early, late. Right, and by looking at the layers that are involved, that tells us a lot about what kind of tumor it is, how to diagnose it. Which means what? That leads us to something really great. If you can diagnose a tumor with the stage and the type and all that, what can we come up with? Right, if we have a nice diagnosis, we can come up with a treatment. Right, so that's why we want to know all these different layers. Okay, all right. So the skin. Flash down this slide just a little bit, but I'm just going to talk about this slide. All right, on this slide, I see two main layers that make up skin, and on the left-hand side, I see some big brackets. Here is the first bracket, right here, going all the way down to here. So it's from here all the way down to here is that first big bracket. What do we call this deep layer? This is the dermis, indeed. Right, and then the dermis has a couple layers. Right, the superficial part of the dermis is what we call the papillary layer. These little ripples right here are what we call papillae, and so that's why this layer that goes up into these little ripples is what we call the papillary layer. These are dermal papillae, and then this deeper layer over here. Maybe you get a little sense. I see a lot of fibers. I see some shading right here. These are collagen fibers. The reticular layer is really strong, right? A lot different than papillary layer. Papillary layer is areolar connective tissue. The deep layer is dense irregular connective tissue. So in the dense irregular connective tissue, what protein do you have a lot more of compared to areolar connective tissue? Collagen. Yeah, and how strong is collagen? Is it like middle strength, super strong, or super weak? Super strong. Yeah, it's a super strong one. So skin is very strong because of all of this collagen here in the dermis. As a matter of fact, that's where leather products come from, just this one particular layer. All right, so that's dermis. And everything on top of the dermis, then, we're going to call the epidermis. Epi means on top. And indeed, we can see some layers. We're going to look at some of these layers. The deepest layer is the living layer where mitosis is taking place, right? So this is where the epidermis rejuvenates, and then those cells move up to the surface, and by the time they get to the surface, they're dead, and they're really flat. So and this is something that covers a surface, so this is an epithelium, right? It just so happened that we call it the epidermis because it's on top of the dermis. So what kind of epithelium is the epidermis? It is stratified, many, many cells. These cells right here are flat, so it's a stratified squamous epithelium. And I see some different layers in here. And for sure, we're going to look at some of those different layers, talk about their function. All right, there's one more area that has all of these adipocytes. right? And this is what we don't want to call that the epidermis, don't want to call it the dermis. It is the hypodermis. Hypo means below in anatomy. The hypodermis is not part of the skin. It is just connective tissue that attaches your skin to underlying structures like nerves and bones and blood vessels, muscles, for instance. Right, hypodermis, but because it's right here with the integument, we point it out in the class just right now. All right, so hypodermis, sometimes it's called superficial fascia. And a person might store half of their body fat in this layer. Right, since the dermis and epidermis, sometimes people call that the cutaneous membrane, the hypodermis sometimes is called the subcutaneous area. Right, subcutaneous, because here's the cutaneous area. All right, what else did I want to say about these? Dermis, deep layer, connective tissue proper, two layers thick. Okay, I don't know if I have it on this slide. No, I'm going to talk more about some of these different layers in a little bit. All right, so let's start with the superficial layer, which is the epidermis. Okay, and epidermis, this is a pretty good picture. This one is even better, almost like the one that's in your study guide. Maybe I put in a picture from a previous edition in the study guide, which I like a lot more, and you should be able to see what the similarity is between this picture and the picture that's in your study guide. All right, so what does an epithelium always have? Okay, an epithelium always has a basal surface, an apical surface, and in the basal surface there is the basement membrane. Right, so here's the basement membrane. Here is the first layer of cells, right, just more superficial to the basement membrane. These cells are live, they're undergoing mitosis. On this slide I don't see any. I think in the illustration I didn't give you, I see a cell undergoing mitosis. So this is the living layer, where cells are actually dividing. And when they divide, they start to move up away from this layer. So this layer is what we call the stratum basale, or basal layer near the basement membrane. Sometimes we give it another name, not too often in this class, but does anybody know the name of the process where you have a seed that's dormant, that's just sitting there, just a seed like a piece of corn that you could make popcorn with, and then if you put it in soil and water it, all of a sudden it starts to grow. What do we call that process where a seed starts to grow into a plant? Germination, right on. So that's a botany term, but we use it in this class because the stratum basale sometimes is called the stratum germinativum. And if you're going to remember how to spell germinativum, guess what? You got to say it out loud a bunch of times. All right, but that's the stratum basale. All right, then cells move up from the germinativum or basale into another layer. And remember, this is an epithelium, so these cells are packed really close together. So there are junctions between them that make sure that the cells stay close together, but they do start to shrink. And as they shrink, they're still stuck together, it forms these pointy ends, these pointy processes on them all over the place, right? And so it kind of reminded somebody of these little spindly cells, and so this is called the stratum spinosum. So you got basale, spinosum. Then they even migrate further to the surface, right? And then I see the next layer. And if you look really close, you see some vesicles, right? And these cells now begin become flat. These vesicles contain a number of different kinds of organic compounds, namely one that's going to make these cells very strong. That chemical is called keratin. And keratin is inside these cells, so it's a lot different than collagen. Where do you find collagen? Inside the cell? Oh, it's in the matrix, right? So collagen is a super strong fiber that's in the matrix or extracellular. Keratin is a super strong protein that is intracellular that gives these cells, okay, it helps protect these cells and gives them a lot of strength. And there are precursors in these granules right here. Sometimes we call that keratohyalin granules. They're eventually going to develop into keratin. And some of these cells also release lipids, which is an oil. Why do you think skin is producing and secreting an oil? Why oil? My car needs oil. Why does my skin need oil? I have no idea. What can you tell me about oil and water? Do they mix?
No,
right? If you have a piece of toast with butter on it, like I did this morning, it fell out of my hand, and it always falls butter side down right on my pants, right? So I got butter on my pants. Can I just get a wet napkin and get that butter off my pants? No way, right? Oil and water do not mix. So that oil around these cells act as a permeability barrier, kind of acts like a saran wrap around your body. It helps prevent dehydration. That's why that oil is there. Okay. I think of another really good example. Raise your hand if you have ever eaten caviar. Ever eat caviar? Okay, maybe a couple people. Well, these little tiny eggs are in a water solution, and you like to put them on a cracker, right, and eat them with other kinds of things. But since the caviar is wet and you put it on a cracker, what's going to happen to the cracker? It's going to get really soggy. You can't pick it up. So what can you do with that cracker so that when you put this watery thing on top of it, it doesn't get soggy? Yeah, you can put a little oil layer right on that cracker, like butter, because butter tastes good, right? And then the watery stuff, and now you have this watery stuff and crunchy stuff at the same time because they're separated from each other, right? So that's what this oil is doing. It acts as a permeability barrier, and it also has a chemical compound that makes these cells strong, which is it's that intracellular material called keratin. Right? And as they move up to the surface, they're moving very far away from the dermis. The dermis has blood vessels. Now, what can you tell me about an epidermis? Does an epidermis ever have a blood vessel in it? Yeah, you're right. It does not. I don't see any blood vessels right here. So as these cells move farther and farther away from that vascular supply, they just can't remain alive. And they die, but they're filled with keratin, and they completely flatten out. So if we want to look at this epithelium and characterize it, how would we characterize it by layers and shape? Is it simple or stratified? It's stratified. And these cells here are flat, so it's a stratified squamous epithelium. All right, and I can certainly see these layers. So since these cells right here, that most of these cells that make up skin are producing keratin, sometimes these cells we call keratinocytes, because site means cell, right, that are making keratin. But do you see other kinds of cells? I see some other cells, right? I see some right in the stratum basale, actually two different kinds of cells, and I see one crawling around up over here in the stratum spinosum, maybe even stratum granulosum. Let's talk about this one that is up away from stratum basale where I have the cursor. This is called a dendritic cell. Sometimes it's called a Langerhans cell. A dendritic cell because it has all these processes sticking out of it, kind of look like a dendrite on a neuron, but it's not a neuron. This thing here fights infection. All right, so this is important for fighting infection. I think in your book it calls it a Langerhans cell, and I think on the test I call it a Langerhans cell. What's another name for a Langerhans cell? It is a dendritic cell. Yeah, dendritic cell. Okay. This one right here is when it deforms, right, when it senses pressure, when the membrane deforms, it can start to send electrical impulses to the brain via the sensory neuron. And so this, sometimes we call this a Merkel's disc. This is very good for light sensation, light pressure. Right? What was really good for deep pressure? Showed you on the previous slide way back when. That was the Pacinian corpuscle down deep in the dermis. This is not as complicated as a Pacinian corpuscle. This is for light touch, very light vibration. And you know what? Some people can read with these things. What can they read with these things? Braille. Yeah, which is if somebody has a vision deficit, they can feel little dimples on a piece of paper and the pattern and how many of those dimples are in a certain area. They can tell what kind of letter it is, right? So they can read with these little things. This one here, right, I see it has a bunch of processes sticking off of it, wandering around between cells. And this thing right here makes a pigment. And what the heck is a pigment? Does anybody, what is a pigment? Yeah, it has something to do with color, right? So on these chairs, I know what pigment it is because I can see that color pretty well. These chairs are yellow, right? So they have a yellow pigment. Well, a pigment doesn't absorb the color you see. It absorbs all the other colors in the spectrum, and it reflects the color it doesn't absorb back to your eye. We call it a yellow pigment anyway, nonetheless. All right, so the darker that pigment is, the more light it absorbs. Right? It gets rid of that light for you. And that light has energy, can be damaging to the skin. So this is what we call a melanocyte, and the pigment it produces is melanin. Melanin. So that's another chemical compound you should know. So you got keratin, you got collagen, keratin, melanin, and I can even see some melanin granules being picked up by the cells in the stratum spinosum, and that cell protects you from sunlight. And melanin, you know, is maybe a brown to black color. So if it's black color, what kind of colors in the rainbow is it absorbing? What kind of light is it absorbing? What kind of light is it shining back to you? It's not shining any light back to you, right, because it looks black. And so all of that sun energy is being absorbed by that pigment, and that protects the dermis from sunlight and ultraviolet light as well. So the darker your skin is because of these cells that we call, what do we call these cells that make your skin dark? Melanocytes. The more melanocytes, the more active melanocytes are in you, the more your skin is protected from sunlight. Right, so that's like a natural sunscreen. That's really important. Hey, what's the most damaging thing you can do to your skin? Sunlight, right? It really will age your skin. All right, so somebody that has a lot of melanocytes, does their skin stay young for a long time, or does it age prematurely? It stays young for a long period of time because it absorbs all of that damaging rays from the sun. All right. If we were to live in a different part of the world, like Australia, okay, some parts of Africa, you would never think of going outside without what? Sunscreen, but even like hats, right? Clothes on your body to help protect yourself. Even though it's hot outside in Australia, I don't think you ever see somebody outside without a hat on. Right, protecting their skin, like nose and ears, from skin cancer, different kinds of skin cancer. Okay, so melanocyte. What's the name of this one over here? It's got two names. Yep, dendritic cell and Langerhans cell. Nice. Okay, let's look at the word slide once again. So this epidermis, right, is an epithelium, stratified squamous. It's there because it resists abrasion. What does abrasion mean? Abrasion. Rubbing. Yeah, rubbing. If you don't have a good sense for that word, make sure you look it up in a dictionary. Google it. Abrasion is just rubbing against two surfaces, rubbing against each other. And if two surfaces are rubbing against each other, they would wear each other out. Well, this kind of epithelium is designed to handle that because it's stratified. Right, so these cells up over here in the apical layer can rub off, and they do all the time, but that's okay because they're being replaced by cells that are moving up from the stratum basale. So that's the beauty of this kind of epithelium, right? It resists abrasion, and it's also a permeability barrier because of all those lipids right there. And of course it helps protect you from sunlight when you have these melanocytes, helps protect you from infection because of these Langerhans cells. I didn't put all this on the word slide, but probably you should recall all that. All right, so how does it grow? It grows from the stratum basale, which is the deepest layer, all the way up to the stratum corneum. And so these cells right here we call the stratum, or this layer we call the stratum corneum, it's filled with what we call cornified cells. Cornified cells are they living or are they dead? They're all dead. Yeah, I'm looking at billions of dead cells. That's just the way it goes. But you people aren't dead. It's just the cells on the surface of our skin. And what are they filled with? Keratin, right? So a cornified cell is a dead cell filled with keratin, but that means it's pretty tough. All right, so it goes from stratum basale to the stratum corneum. Basale is this first layer. Most superficial layer is the stratum corneum. And the shape of the cells also change from columnar or cuboidal to squamous as they migrate from a deep to a superficial layer. All right, maybe I'll come back to some other things in just a little bit. All right, so we're still looking at some epidermis right here. And the word slide has a lot of really nice things that we've been talking about so far, like here's Langerhans cells. What's another name for a Langerhans cell? Dendritic. Yeah, dendritic cell. There's that Merkel's disc, melanocyte, keratinocytes. Nice, we talked about all this. Now, what we didn't talk about specifically are the layers. I've kind of mentioned them in passing, but here's the basement membrane, and that first layer then we call the stratum basale, And then those cells move up, they get stretched out, they start to shrink, right? But the desmosomes still keep them together, gives them that spiky appearance, so this is what we call the stratum spinosum. They move, they get pushed further up to the top of the skin, and now, okay, I see granules in there, so we're going to call that the stratum granulosum, and then they get pushed up over here, far away from those blood vessels. This is the stratum corneum. So that is the four main layers of most of the skin that you have on your body. Just like that. But you know what? We have two different kinds of skin. Let me see if I can find another kind of skin. I tell you what, let's go over layers with this one first. All right, so here is a part of the dermis, this little wave or projection up into the epithelium. This is what we call a dermal papillae, kind of looks like a fingertip. All right, so here is, what layer is this? Stratum basale, and then these spiky cells, stratum spinosum, and then you see, what do you see in here? Yeah, granules, so stratum granulosum, and then stratum corneum. Okay, so that's a pretty good look at that particular slide. Let's look at this one right here. This shows me a lot of good stuff. So I see epidermis, and then down below it is the dermis. What do we call these projections of the dermis into the epidermis? This is a dermal papillae, We're going to get back to that in just a second. So you see layers of the epidermis here. Here's the stratum basale. And is that a living or a dead layer? That's a living layer, right? And then we move up into the stratum spinosum. I can't really see the edges of the cells very well, okay, to tell. That's just that's a stratum spinosum. And then I see some granules over here. You see some granules here, 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 and here? That's the stratum granulosum. Now here's something that we didn't see before. Do you see this white line? Do you get an impression that there's a line going across right here? Some kinds of skin have this additional layer called the stratum lucidum. And it's called lucid because it looks clear in some areas. And when somebody's speaking very clearly to you, we call that lucid. And it's really nice to be lucid. If you're not lucid, then show up in the emergency room, they'll know that. They'll wonder what's wrong, what happened. Head trauma, whatever, right? So stratum lucidum is this clear area. And then from the stratum lucidum all the way to the superficial region right here, right, is the stratum corneum. And there's maybe even 100 cells. This is a super, super thick one compared to the previous slide that we were looking at. Where's what we were looking at before? This is much more magnification compared to this one here because I can see the whole dermis. This is what we call thick skin. Thick skin has this additional layer called the stratum lucidum. Thin skin does not. And all of us have both of these kinds of skin. Most of your body is covered with thin skin. All right, it's very pliable. And what kind of accessory structure do you have pretty much all over your body? It's a little bit more prominent, like on the top of your head. Okay, you have hair. That's right. No matter where you look, you have hair follicles. Sometimes it's not really too prominent. Okay, that's thin skin. Thin skin will have hair follicles. And this right here, thick skin, never has a hair follicle. So where would you find thick skin at? Yeah, the anterior surface of your hand, right, in anatomic position, or palmar surface sometimes we call that, or the plantar surface of your feet. We can't really say that's anterior or posterior, but we'll just call that the plantar surface, never has hair. It has thick skin, right? There's something else when you look at that skin, something else that's different compared to thin skin, which also has hair follicles. What's another feature of thick skin that you don't see on thin skin? You got fingerprints, that's right. And those fingerprints are due to these dermal papillae. Certain areas you'll have in a group of these dermal papillae, and it pushes on the stratum corneum and it forms a ridge, which is then you see as a fingerprint or a toe print or a palm print or something like that. All right, so those fingerprints come from these dermal papillae. So thick skin, never has a hair follicle. All right, so the reason why these dermal papillae are there is because there's a blood vessel that pokes its way up over here, so it's like poking a blood vessel up into the interior of the epidermis without actually getting into the epidermis, right? Because this connective tissue does have blood vessels, but this epidermis here and over here does not have blood vessels, so it helps nourish this tissue, keeps it alive. All right, so here's an example of thick. So you got two different kinds of skin, thick and skin. Let's look a little bit at the dermis, right? So here's the basement membrane of the epidermis. Everything deep to that is the dermis. And can you see that there is like a layer here and a layer here? Do you see a difference between this first layer and the second layer? What do you see more in this deeper layer, which we call the reticular layer? It's a little bit of a misnomer. I see a lot of collagen fibers. See collagen fibers going every which way. What kind of tissue has collagen fibers that go every which way? Dense, irregular connective tissue. And indeed, right, the reticular layer of the dermis has that dense, regular connective tissue. And the more superficial part of the dermis is what we call the papillary layer. Doesn't have as much collagen, maybe hardly any at all. And this is an areolar connective tissue. And I think you've kind of looked at areolar connective tissue. It has a little bit, right? But areolar connective tissue not only has collagen, what's another fiber that it has? It's got maybe a little bit of reticular, yeah, that kind of holds the skin together a little bit. I'm not so impressed with those reticular fibers ever, including skin. But there's a fiber, another fiber that I really like in the papillary layer right here. And that is elastic. Yeah, those elastic proteins. And so what does that do? That helps shrink wrap your skin onto your body so that it doesn't sag. Okay, so these elastic fibers are really handy. Ultraviolet light damages those fibers. So your skin, right, isn't held as tightly to your body as maybe it was, as it did at one particular point in time. Okay, and then all of these fibroblasts, of course, need a blood supply in order to produce all of these fibers. Right, so it's dependent on getting oxygen and nutrients to make those fibers. All right, what is the extracellular glycolipid good for? I didn't tell you what a lipid is. Anybody know what a lipid is? It's a fat or an oil, right? All right, so what is that lipid or oil good for? It keeps you from dehydrating. Wonderful. Is keratin intracellular or extracellular? It's intracellular. Is that the same for collagen? No. Okay, so please don't mix up keratin and collagen together, even though they sound kind of similar. All right, so here are the layers. We talked about all the layers. All right, thick skin has that additional layer. The dermis, all of the dermis is connective tissue, not an epithelium. All right, so it's either areolar or dense irregular connective tissue. What part of the dermis is dense irregular connective tissue? Reticular. All right, that's why I call it a misnomer, because this layer right here is loaded with collagen fibers, but yet it's called the reticular layer. It really doesn't have much in the way of reticular fibers. Reticular just means a network or a mesh. And when people first saw this layer, they go, oh, it kind of looks like a network of fibers. We're just going to call it the reticular layer, as opposed to the papillary layer that doesn't have a lot of fibers in it. Okay, just a little bit of a misnomer by today's nomenclature. All right, so papillary layer, superficial, contains that subdermal papillary plexus, which is a network of blood vessels that can nourish the epidermis, and it is areolar CT, we know that. Okay, reticular layer, deep, sure, dense irregular, we know that. Strength is due to collagen and elastic, not necessarily reticular fibers, right? Because reticular fibers are way too weak for that to really give any kind of strength to skin. Okay, and because of all these collagen fibers right here, when your skin has been lacerated, let's just say you have a cut going down through your skin into the subcutaneous layer, we can use a suture or a stitch and sew your skin back together, right? Because this collagen is tough, right? Because you can put a thread right through it and join the edges of that wound together, and this collagen fiber is going to hold those two edges together. All right, these collagen fibers are also used for something else, a commercial product. And that is, take a look at your feet and shoes, if they're made out of leather. Yeah, so leather products come from just this reticular layer right here, not from the epidermis, right, and not from the areolar connective tissue, because if that was left on skin, it would just rot and stink, right? So when we tan a hide, right, this comes from a skin of an animal, when we tan a hide, then all of these softer tissues are removed, and that leaves you with collagen fibers, which is really, really strong. Leather is really, really strong as a result of that. Okay. Let me just look through this slide a little bit. Function. Okay. All right. Well, we spent a lot of time looking at these layers. And before we get into skin color, I want to talk about something else, and I want to go all the way back to one of those previous slides that we're looking at, like this one right here. That's nice. That's good. Okay, I'm going to keep my arrow. Okay, so we said one way that you can damage skin is by burning it. And we can stage a burn depending on the degree of damage that has been done to the skin. And it's called what? First degree, second degree, third degree. Which is the worst one? Third degree, yeah. So first degree is the first kind. All right, so the skin has been heated up way above body temperature, and none of these cells have been burned away, right? But it still has exceeded the temperature that will support life. But if this first layer here gets really, really hot, who cares, right? Because what are these cells? Are they alive? They're not alive anyway, right? But nonetheless, the heat penetrates a little bit, and maybe it damages some of these blood vessels. Oh, look at this blood vessel. Right, that's that subdermal papillary plexus, right? And so these blood vessels start to leak a little bit. A lot of blood goes into this region, and so blood is a red color. So this color is going to have a red appearance, and it might be swollen a little bit. That is a first degree burn. But none of the cells have actually been burned away. You don't have to worry about infection. Don't have to worry about dehydration, okay? But I'm sure it hurts really, really bad. Next kind of burn. So if somebody that has a first degree burn, they're lucky, right? Because not much has happened to their skin. It's just uncomfortable. A second degree burn penetrates a little bit more deeply, damages more of these blood vessels, so they become leaky, and fluid actually leaks out, right? And it ends up between the epidermis and the dermis. And that forms a little blister, right? Not a blood blister, but a fluid blister, kind of mostly made out of what plasma is made out of, blood plasma. All right, but still, the living cells in the stratum basale are still alive, which means what? Since it's the growing layer, it can replace all the cells that were severely damaged or even killed because of that second degree burn. So somebody with a second degree burn, lucky or unlucky? They're still kind of lucky because their skin can grow back, right? Okay. Let's look up at a third degree burn. Somebody with a third degree burn, all these hair shafts, the part of a hair follicle that's sticking up above the surface of the skin is called a shaft. All these shafts have been burned away, maybe even the epidermis down to this layer right here. Do you see where I'm pointing? Down into the dermis, a superficial region of the dermis, but all these cells here have been burned away or turned to charcoal. Is that a lucky person or an unlucky person? Unlucky person, okay? But I want to change your opinion. I still think that that person is really lucky for the following reason. Where is the living layer of the epidermis at? What stratum? Stratum basale, and I see it right here. Do you all agree this is the stratum basale? Okay, look where it goes. Here's the stratum basale, and where is it going? all the way down to the base of this hair follicle. What do we have here? We have cells that are alive and growing, and if this part of the skin hasn't been damaged or burned away, what can these cells do? They can grow back, okay, with a lot of care. Of course, you've got to prevent dehydration and infection. They can grow back, and a person still can grow back their own skin. So in that sense, I think they're lucky. The unlucky person is when they get a third degree burn and it goes all the way past the base of this hair follicle, deep down into the dermis, then there are no longer any cells from the stratum basale there. Their skin will never grow back. And then what do they need? Then they need a skin graft from some other location in their body. Hopefully they have some good skin, a lot of good skin left. Okay, so that's why it's important to know these different layers, where you find them in the skin, because that's how you diagnose and treat people. That's just one little example. All right, so we said that an epithelium will cover a surface or line a cavity, or what's the third thing it can do? It makes a gland. Yeah, epithelium can make a gland. And so here we have the epidermis, which is an epithelium, and look at this hair shaft. We see this thing with a lot of buds on it. We've looked at the shapes of glands before, so here we have a gland. And it is a sebaceous gland. It secretes oily organic compound onto this hair follicle, and so that just helps lubricates the motion of this hair follicle out to the surface of the skin. Right? And it also helps prevent infection. Right? It's not like a good antibiotic, but it does prevent bacterial growth to a large degree. Right, that compound is what we call sebum. Right, and so this sebaceous gland is always associated with a hair follicle. Right, so that's a secretory gland. I see another kind of gland over here, right, and this is a sweat gland, just an eccrine sweat gland. The third kind of gland, which is not on this slide, it's called an apocrine sweat gland. Well, let me go back to this eccrine. Eccrine just secretes a solution of water and salt onto the surface of your body, water and salt, right? And that water evaporates, cools you down. The eccrine sweat gland would go, maybe I'll circle about how big it is compared to the eccrine. It's about that big. I don't know how much bigger it is in volume, but it's maybe 3 times the diameter. Oh, get your calculators out. How would you calculate volume? It'd be 3 times 3 times 3. That's how big it would be in volume, right? So it's a lot bigger. Those apocrine glands you have in the inguinal region of our body and axillary region. You know where those are? Tell me where the axillary region is. Okay. Armpit, yeah. Now those glands don't secrete water. They secrete a compound that is more organic. Right? And that organic secretion really doesn't have any kind of smell to it. It's not odoriferous. But since it's organic, bacteria can use it as an energy source. They can grow. And some of the products of those bacteria do produce odor. So those are the regions of your body that typically are a little bit more odoriferous compared to other areas that just have eccrine sweat glands, right? So axillary and inguinal region. What else do I see on the slide? Here is a muscle, right? It's attached to somewhere near the basement membrane and a hair follicle, base of a hair follicle, and when it contracts, it helps pull the hair follicle up to the surface, right? And it also straightens it out. See, the hair is kind of lying down to the right. When it contracts, it pulls the hair straight up, and it pulls it up a little bit because this thing is going to contract. And what do we call that little hill that it produces around a hair follicle? That is a goose bump. Maybe you've not called it that before, but I've heard that a lot when I was growing up, right? A goose bump is produced by this arrector pili. That's a muscle, so it's specialized for contraction. Now, right now, if you concentrate really, really hard, can you produce goose pimples on the surface of your skin? Oh, I'm trying really hard. I can't do it. So what kind of muscle is that arrector pili muscle? It's involuntary. What kind of muscle is involuntary? You got 2 kinds. You got cardiac muscle. Could that be cardiac muscle? No, can't be cardiac muscle. And what about skeletal? I heard skeletal. That's a pretty good guess, but skeletal muscle is what? Voluntary. So that can't be skeletal muscle. That only leaves smooth muscle left, right? So that is definitely some smooth, an example of a smooth muscle. It's not deep inside a body cavity lining a hollow organ, but here's some in your integument even. All right, here's another arrector pili muscle. And we see some nerves going to it.
The nerves that go there come from the autonomic nervous system, right? So smooth muscle is controlled by other parts of your body. One way is through the autonomic nervous system. Okay. So now I think we can talk a little bit about skin color. All right, so skin color is due to pigments, right? And a pigment is just something that absorbs light. So if you have a blue pigment, is it absorbing blue light? No, it's not absorbing that, so it's being reflected back to your eye for you to see. And remember, white light has all the colors of the rainbow, and you can remember all the colors of the rainbow how? There's a little saying, there's a little name of somebody, Roy G. Biv, right? And so even I can tell the colors of a rainbow because I know Roy G. Biv. As long as I start at the correct side, I know we got what? Red, orange, yellow, green, all the way down. Yeah, all the way down. I could impress you guys. Even though I don't have any idea what I'm talking about, I could make it look like I do. All right, so a pigment is just something that absorbs light. And then there's also blood in skin. What color is blood going to give skin? Yeah, kind of a red color, maybe pink, something like that. As long as you don't have a lot of melanocytes that will match that color, right? There are some parts of your body that don't have many melanocytes, like your lips, for instance. Right? So what color do people's lips look like? Pinkish, yeah. So you have a lot of blood vessels that are superficial, and so that color kind of shines through. All right, the natural sunscreen comes from what kind of cell? That's not on the slide. It comes from a melanocyte, and it produces melanin, right? That's a brown to black pigment, and that protects you from the harmful effects of sunlight, right? Melanocytes produce melanin, yeah, and they live in the stratum basale. Moles and age spots, right? As we get older, our skin will get a little bit blotchier, right, because there's going to be an increased number of melanocytes in some little localized area on our skin, and that little area might look a little darker. It could start out maybe looking like the head of a pin, for instance, and might get a little bit bigger. All right, so that's what we call an age spot. Freckles, all right, increased melanin production in a localized area. So age spot due to increased number of cells, right? But a freckle is due to the same number of cells, but they're producing more of that pigment, and it produces a little freckle on somebody. Albinism. This is a condition where people inherit the inability to make melanin. So if you can't produce melanin, what color is your skin going to be? White. You could say white, this is true, but you still have blood in your skin, so it's going to look a little pinkish, probably, right, depending on what area you look at. Thick skin, probably not, because the blood vessels are really far away. All right, so somebody with albinism will look kind of very, very pale, maybe a little white, but if you look at their skin, it should look a little pink because there's no pigment there. But remember, you don't have blood vessels in your hair. So what color is their hair going to be? Absolutely white. Okay. Maybe we'll talk about hair in just a little bit. So that's inherited. It's congenital. You're born with that particular condition. And what can you tell me? What does a person with albinism have to really pay attention to? Sunlight, that's right. They probably can get burned, right, in sunlight in just maybe a minute or two. If somebody here has really fair skin, I bet if you go out in direct sunlight in the summertime, you can be burned in 5 minutes, right? But you still have some melanin. Somebody has no melanin, probably just a minute or maybe a little bit less. Okay. Can I finish this up? Yeah, I can finish at least this up. Cyanosis, all right, is a blue color. Arterial blood is red. Venous blood has more of a blue cast to it, so if you're not oxygenating blood properly, that blood is going to have a blue color, not a red color. And when it comes to the surface of your skin, instead of looking pink, you're going to have a little bit of a blue cast to you. So, for instance, if there's a newborn and they have a heart abnormality or their lungs are not formed properly, they're going to be what we call cyanotic. That's because their blood isn't being oxygenated. And somebody's going to want to know right away what's causing that. They got to fix that problem, right? If it's a heart problem or lung, maybe a malformation of a heart or vessels going to the lungs or from the heart. Jaundice, on the other hand, is not blue, it's yellow. right? Jaundice is due to kind of two things working together. It could be due to liver disease, right? The liver processes the pigments that come from blood. Hemoglobin comes from blood. So if you're getting a lot of breakdown of red blood cells, but remember, we all lose about 2 million every second. So the liver is real important processing that heme group. And if the liver is damaged, it can't process it all the way, and it builds up in the body. It's called bilirubin, right? And it gives your body a yellow cast. It actually can be quite yellow, depending on the degree of that disease. So the whites of your eyes, even if you have a lot of melanocytes and your skin is really dark, the whites of your eyes will be yellow. They won't be flashing like a street sign, but they'll be really yellow. Fingernails yellow. Sometimes babies are born with jaundice. If there's a mismatch in antibodies between the mom and the baby, if the mom's antibodies start to break down a lot of the baby's red blood cells, then the baby will be born jaundiced because the baby's liver is not really strong enough yet to handle all of that bilirubin. And unfortunately, bilirubin is very toxic to a newborn's nervous system. Not so much for an adult, but for a growing nervous system is really toxic, and we really like to prevent that from happening. Birthmark, last thing, make sure you sign the sign-in sheet. A birthmark is an increase in blood vessels in some area, increased vascularity. So you have, in some area of your body, a lot more blood vessels. It's just going to look a little bit darker, and we just call that a birthmark. Okay, sign the sign-in sheet, please. Okay, have a good day.